Hey everyone, this is Heidi St. John. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm glad you guys are here because I think you're going to be really encouraged and inspired by my guest. We're going to spend some time today and tomorrow, hopefully, talking about the importance of adoption and the foster care system, which really is broken. I have a new guest on the show. I told him before we started, he's going to be my off-the-bench hero for this week. His name is Glenn Harwood. We're going to have a fantastic conversation. Stick around. I think you're going to be encouraged. Well, for those of you who are newer or newish, I should say, to the show, I want to say welcome to you. If you have been listening for a while, we would love it if you'd leave reviews for this show over at iTunes and let other people know about the Off the Bench podcast. We recently passed 15 million downloads since we started using the new platform Anchor. And so we're excited to see that grow. Also want to let you know that we've got a new study we're working on at MomStrong International. And for the month of October, I will be returning to my role as the primary teacher and writer for MomStrong International. We're going to be studying about identity. God has a lot to say about our identity in Him, who we are. We're confused in the church right now. The culture is certainly on its head in a lot of ways. I think it's because the church has forgotten its role in the culture. It's one of the reasons I'm excited to have my guest on today. Glenn Harwood is with me today. After a 22-year career as an Army officer, he moved his family of four to Midland, Texas, and began a second career as an assistant U.S. attorney, in other words, a federal prosecutor. After 6.5 years as a federal prosecutor, he decided to run for district attorney. So he's going to have a big fight ahead of him. That primary election is going to come up in March of 2024, something I know a few little things about. During his time in Midland, he and his wife have fostered 6 children. And adopted 2 of those children through Child Protective Services. And now as a 53-year-old-ish couple, in addition to their mostly grown kids, they're raising a 5-year-old girl and a 10-year-old boy. Glenn, I'm pleased to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I want to start today by just talking about your, where you started and sort of where you came at. You know, how you got to where you are, because there's a lot of people listening to this, you know, the theme of the show. And for it's been, I don't know, 8 or 9 years that I've been talking about getting off the bench. I'm trying to get people to figure out what it is that God would have them use. What's in your hand, you know, whether it's a position, it's opportunity, you know, for you guys, you've gotten involved in the foster care system and through adoption. But you started out as a career military person, an officer, right, in the military. And so I'm curious, tell us a little bit about that and then sort of how you got from there to here.
Well, my wife and I were married in 1991. In 1993, I enlisted in the Army. And I went to officer candidate school, and I started as an infantry officer. So we got to travel the world a little bit. A few years later, after an assignment in Germany, I got a scholarship to go to law school. So the Army sent me to law school. So I went to William & Mary Law School in Virginia.
Hey, they're about as woke as a school can get.
Well, they weren't then.
I was going to say, you survived. You came out and you're okay.
I did. They were the more conservative school in Virginia.
Wow.
But they have gotten a little bit more liberal. There's little specks of conservatism that's still... that you can still find there. It's a good school.
What a beautiful campus, too. My goodness.
It's gorgeous. In fact, my oldest son ended up going and getting his undergraduate degree there just a few years ago.
So, wow.
But yes, I was often told the tales of the various, liberal events happening on campus and things like that.
I was there not too long ago, and I spent a little bit of time in the bookstore, and I was like, wow, these are the things our young people are reading. This is amazing.
Williamsburg, Virginia is a must see for people who want to get a little American history.
I agree.
Trip in. You've got Colonial Williamsburg right there, which is beautiful. You've got Jamestown, which is, just down the road, and you can see the settlement. And then Yorktown is just down the road as well. So, get a couple hours south of D.C. on your family history trip and go down to Williamsburg. It's a great area.
I agree. Couldn't agree more.
Go in the spring, though. It's hot in the summer.
Yeah, indeed. It's true.
So, yeah, we went to Williamsburg, and I spent 3 years there going to law school. And then after that, I spent the next 14 years of my Army career as a JAG, primarily as a prosecutor, you know, had a variety of assignments, again, all over the world. We spent some time in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. We spent some time in Charlottesville, Virginia. We spent some time in Fort Hood, Texas. We spent time in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, Washington, D.C. And then my last 5 years in the Army were 2 years in Korea and 3 years in Germany. And throughout that time, I also spent a couple of years deployed. I was in Iraq in both 2003 and 2006 and 7. And then in 2014, I was in Afghanistan. So I had the chance to see the world. My family saw the world and serve all over the world. Mm. So it was a great experience.
Wow. And so after that, you decided, so you have a second career then as a federal prosecutor. And what was that transition like?
So it was getting hired by the federal government is a monstrosity. There's a lengthy process. So we packed our bags in Germany, not knowing where we were moving to, about Memorial Day weekend in 2015. But then I got a call that I had been hired in the Western District of Texas. There's 94 districts throughout the United States. Texas has four of them, North, South, East, and West. And so I got hired to come to the Western District of Texas and be a federal prosecutor.
Wow.
And so we put down roots in Midland with our four children at the time. And I got to work. 3 weeks after we moved here, our oldest went off to college. And then we had another one graduate high school the next year and leave for college. And then 3 years later, another one left for college. And just recently, about a year, 14 months ago, our fourth left for college. So
wow.
We were in the process of becoming empty nesters, but then some other things came up.
Wow. So I'm going to jump into that in just a minute, because I really want to spend a lot of our time today talking about your move into the foster system, the foster care system, and how God sort of put that on your heart. But before we do that, I want to jump into your run, because you decided to run for district attorney. You told me before, I thought your primary was coming up in March of 2023, but it's 2024. So you've still got a little bit of time to get ready. What in the world would motivate you to do something like running for this position?
Well, I wouldn't have thought when I moved to Midland that I would be well situated to run for public office, because I was relatively new to the area. But I actually came to learn that became an advantage. The office of district attorney, particularly in Texas, you're the person in the county that makes decisions about what cases get indicted and what cases go to trial and how cases are resolved. Everything from, petty offenses up to, rapes and murders and those types of things. So it's a position with a lot of responsibility. And it's an elected position. And then all the prosecutors work for you. And in Midland, we've had a couple of bad years with the way the office has gone. And so law enforcement started encouraging me several years ago to think about running for it. Because it's an elected position and all the prosecutors work for the district attorney, the people with potential in the district attorney's office to take over are kind of stuck because they work for the incumbent. So they can't very easily run against their boss. So it became an advantage that I'm a little bit of an outsider as a federal prosecutor, where I can actually credibly take on the district attorney and run for that office because I don't work for her.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So there is that layer of accountability. I'm curious, because I know a lot of people listening are going to be, they're going to feel the same way I am. Why do these positions matter? So we see them come up in our, in our voter guides, people who are running for, I met a woman running for coroner. I'm like, you have to run for that? Why is that position matter? I think we're kind of an uneducated voter, voting public right now, and we're paying a pretty steep price for it. Why should voters care? So, because most people listening to this are not in your area. Why should they care who's running for the DA job?
Sure. The person who holds that type of position has an important position of trust. And I truly view it as a position of trust. You're a trustee of the authority You're a trustee of the jobs of the people that work in your office. It doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the state of Texas. It belongs to Midland County. And you're entrusted with that authority in those positions. And it's an awesome amount of authority. If, you know, if somebody is engaged in certain conduct, you're the person ultimately that's responsible for deciding whether that's criminal conduct or not criminal conduct, whether or not they're going to be charged with a felony, whether they'll be charged with a misdemeanor, whether or not they might not be charged at all. So people's lives and their livelihoods are at stake when those types of decisions are made. Now, you see a stark contrast. Midland's a very, very conservative area. We're in West Texas, and it's a staunchly Republican area. There's other places in Texas, like Austin and Dallas and San Antonio, Houston, El Paso, where you see some of the district attorneys are funded by people like George Soros.
Yep.
And you have this stark contrast between conservatives and liberals. And that's not really the issue in Midland. In Midland, it's a matter of judgment and decision making, you know. So it's not really conservative versus liberal.
So it feels less political.
It's less political, and it's more, quite frankly, brass tacks in terms of decisions made and judgment. Nonetheless, you know, it doesn't matter if somebody's life is ruined because somebody's liberal, or somebody's in, you know, not competent, or if somebody's just not making decisions that are consistent with the judgment of the community and the values of the community. People's lives are at stake. You know, whether it's a career criminal or whether it's a person who just found themselves in a difficult situation, they need to trust the person who's making those decisions. Law enforcement needs to trust the person that's making those decisions, because really the district attorney's office ultimately ends up being a check on law enforcement.
Right.
And so you can have aggressive law enforcement and they might head down a certain direction, but without, you know, somebody that they respect in the district attorney's office that can guide them to correct legal and good judgment type decisions, that can very quickly, you know, go sideways as well.
Yeah, I can see that happening. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So I have a question for you. Before the break, you were talking about how this is such an important position of trust. A lot of people, I mean, I see names that come up on the voters' guides where I live all the time that I have no idea, you know, people running for positions of authority in the judiciary. There are people running for positions of authority in law enforcement, such as the sheriff's race here. Boy, we learned in COVID pretty quick how important the role of a sheriff can be. And I'm curious to know, has the attitude toward the changing attitude toward the police, towards law enforcement, has that impacted the role of the district attorney? And if so, how is that? How do you see it different?
It certainly does impact the role of the district attorney, because the district attorney always is in tension with law enforcement, because they have different functions. Law enforcement often thinks, oh, the district attorney's just dumping my cases. They don't take these cases seriously. They're giving them away. Those types of things. And of course, the district attorneys are always thinking, oh, law enforcement's not doing a good job investigating, those kind of things. So without a respectful relationship and a trusting relationship between, you know, the uniformed law enforcement, whether it be sheriff's investigators or police departments, and the district attorney's office, you can have a disconnect in the way laws are enforced in a certain jurisdiction. Some of the bigger cities in Texas are seeing it pretty starkly, because some of the same people that are funding the district attorney's races are also funding campaigns to defund police departments and things like that.
Yeah.
Travis County and Austin in particular are it's just a disaster. Yep. They've got a homeless crisis there.
Yep.
They've got a crime crisis.
Yep. Self-inflicted.
And And then, of course, our governor's trying to, he's trying to smooth over some of those rough edges by using his state law enforcement, but they're just not equipped to handle the local crime and the local issues the same way the local police department should be equipped and funded to do.
Yeah, I mean, I live just a few minutes from Portland, Oregon, and that city has seen a 200% rise in the murder rate. And it's just, it's sad to watch. And these are leadership issues. And I've been telling people for a long time, that's why it matters. We've got a leadership crisis in the country. And it matters from the president of the United States to the district attorney, to who we send to Congress, to who's on our city councils. If we don't have wise people who actually care about the greater good of the people in their area, I think we're going to continue this downward spiral. I want to transition here and talk about your involvement in the foster care system, because to me, someone who's as busy as you and your wife, right, you've raised, you know, four children and you're getting ready to like, hey, the house is going to be quiet after work and maybe we can go out for dinner. But no, not you guys. You decided you're going to get involved in the foster care system, which I love because it hits close to home for me. As I was telling you before we started recording, my sister has recently adopted two little boys out of the foster care system in Oregon. It's changed the dynamic in her family 100%. And I saw just a little glimpse into what she was dealing with as she was trying to navigate that system and these boys who came to her really so broken. How did you and your wife get involved in caring about kids in the foster care system?
Well, very reluctantly. I mean, it's a super hard thing. When we lived in Texas 15 years ago or so, it piqued our interest. But moving around with the military, we didn't see the foster community. On military mm-hmm. bases, there are no foster kids. It's not something you see because there's a time lead to get certified and to get, you know, qualified to be a foster parent. And when you're in the military and you live somewhere for 2 years, it's not practical and it's not realistic to get certified and licensed to foster care and then foster and then leave. So in the military communities, it's just not something that we saw. We didn't see kids go into foster care and we didn't see kids being fostered by military people. When my military career was over in 2015 and we moved to Midland, we sort of found ourselves at the intersection of a great need, mm-hmm. An ability, and a calling from God. And those three lines intersected, you know, right at our address. And so we went to an information meeting in September of 2016. We decided that we were interested, and our goal was simply to foster. We had this vision in mind of kids coming in and out of our house and us providing a safe place for them. And that's not how it worked at all. We finally got licensed about a year and a half later. It was an extraordinarily lengthy process, but we eventually got licensed in March of 2018. And we got licensed on a Tuesday, and we got our first call 2 days later on a Thursday.
Wow. Wow.
And so that Saturday, we picked up a little boy and spent the day with him. The following Wednesday, they brought him to our house, and we fostered him for about four months. Then he went to stay with family for about another 4 months, and then he came back to us in December of 2018, and he's been with us since, and we adopted him in November of 2019.
Wow. Wow. So there's so much I want to talk to you about with regard to this subject, but I want to take it back to sort of the basics of foster care, because parents, I think, are confused by the system. There's a lot of misinformation about it. A lot of people are kind of, you know, home visits are scary, you know, and what's going to happen to my own kids if I start fostering? I want to sort of start with the process. So if somebody's interested in becoming a foster parent, where do they start?
Yeah, that's a good question. And all those questions and all those issues are issues we've addressed with our friends as well. So at least in Texas, and it's similar in other states, in Texas, the foster care system is run by the Department of let's see, DFPS, Department of Family and Protective Services. CPS is how it's known, Child Protective Services. The system in general is designed to place kids in a safe environment and give the caretakers, the parents, the usually just the mom, a chance to kind of get her life in order. And then the kid would be returned, or the children would be returned to that mom. And that happens sometimes. And that's the theory of the system. But what also happens is that children are taken away from their mom or their parents. And I say mom because that's primarily what you see. They're taken away from the mom, and then the mom can't get her act together. And then, you know, over the course of a year or so, mom's rights gets terminated by the court system. And then the kids are in foster care, and then they're available for adoption. And in Texas, there are thousands and thousands of children right now who are available for adoption because their parents have either died or they've been had their parental rights terminated by the state, or they've relinquished their rights. And there's a lot of ways that can happen. Some of the kids find themselves in care because the parents have engaged in criminal activity and they're in prison, for example, and they don't have other family that can take care of them. Some of the kids are in care because their parents have neglected them, and they aren't able to keep a clean household. They're not able to keep food in the pantry. They're not able to care for their basic needs. Some of the children are in foster care because they've actually been abused by their parents. Mm. And we've seen all different examples of all of those in our 4 years that we've been in the foster care system.
Wow. I'm out of time for today, Glenn, but I'd love it if you'd come back tomorrow. I've got so many more questions as you're talking. I'm writing questions down about the foster care system, kind of where you think we're going from here. Would you be willing to come back tomorrow and let's pick this conversation up? Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You guys, we're out of time for today. I know a lot of you are interested in helping and becoming part of your community. Fostering is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for you to share the love of God with a child in need. We're going to come back tomorrow with Glenn and pick this conversation up where we left off today. Have a great day, everybody, and I'll see you back here tomorrow at the intersection of faith and culture.